Welcome to episode 404 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how much the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps to make our world smaller and bring us closer together. Here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. If you'd like to see what we're talking about, be sure to check out our YouTube channel by searching for Fly Away Podcast, and then you can see all of our smiley faces. My name is Lindsay, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Sandy, Donna, and George. Italy is, without question, one of the top destinations in Europe for North Americans. However, the classic trip to Italy usually consists of Rome, Florence, and Venice. Then the second classic trip usually involves the Amalfi Coast and the Sorrento area. However, the Piedmont region of Italy should not be overlooked when you are planning a visit. With Turin at its heart, this charming area of northwestern Italy offers big city excitement and small village charm with no shortages of lakes, mountains, wine, and even rice paddies. Elizabeth recently had the opportunity to visit all corners of this area, and we want to hear all about it. So tell me more about the wine. I'm just kidding.
This is Kendall Jackson that I'm drinking tonight. Don't worry, but because I'm saving my Italian wine for, you know, better times, I guess.
We're not actually better times.
I mean, this is good times, I guess.
I see how we rate now.
Well, and right now I have two cases of wine sitting downstairs because I was the central delivery point for everybody's wine that they ordered. We pooled together just because, you know, it's expensive to ship it back. And so we pooled together, and not all of the wine downstairs is mine. And so I'm kind of afraid that I might accidentally drink the wrong bottle. So I'm waiting until I've distributed.
Accidentally.
I know, right? Exactly. I mean, yeah. What are they going to do? Except I like these people and I want to stay friends with them. So the wine is wonderful. And actually this is where Barolo wine and Barbaresco wine come from. So if you know Italian wines at all, those are two of the big players, both in name and also in oomph, if you will. So some of the really, you know, rich red wines that come from Italy, come from this area. And so it was really, you know, we did winery tours, just a couple of small ones. We also got a chance to try Grignolino wine, which is it's an old grape that was pretty much extinct that this one, little winery and a couple of others sort of brought back. And, it was delightful. And I did already drink all of mine for that. It was actually, we went to a different winery and I bought the larger volume of wine. And then we went to the smaller one. I was like, I can't buy another, like, almost case of wine. Chris might divorce me. So I just bought a couple of bottles, and we actually shared one in Milan on our last night there. And then I had another one almost immediately after I came home. It was really good. It's really delicious light wine. And I feel very fortunate to have gotten to try that. So, but a really delightful wine area, very, you know, it looks kind of like most wine regions do in Europe with the, you know, wine, the grapes on hills, and just a really beautiful countryside area. So it was only one, well, we did two winery visits on two different days. We did them in the morning, which I don't recommend. It's, you know, easy to then take a nap afterwards. And P.S., this was in June and it was hot in northwestern Italy. I mean, hot, like 100 degrees. It was the kind of thing where I left here and they were like, oh, there's going to be a big heat wave. I'm like, ha ha, I'm leaving. And then I got to Italy. I was like, oh, it followed me. It was just as hot here as it was there.
All of Europe right now. It's intense.
Because after Italy, I went to Ireland and it was unseasonably cold in Ireland. So let me tell you, my 1 week wardrobe did not suit. It was great for Italy, not great for Ireland.
But you know what, that when that happens, you just have to go shopping. Oh darn.
I did buy a couple of woolen items. They have a few of those in Ireland, so it was okay. But I did look a little foolish, I will say, for the first couple of days, because I was definitely dressed for summer. That said, after you've been in 100 degree heat and you get to like 65 degrees, I was walking around Dublin in shorts and a t-shirt, and people were looking at me like I was crazy. I was like, this feels great. It was just delightful for a couple of days. So Yeah. But the wine actually there, if you are a wine lover, you know, most people go to Tuscany, and the Chianti region and all that for wine, but there's some great wine to be found all over Italy. You really can't swing a cat without hitting a winery in Italy. And if you really want that Barolo and Barbaresco, you do have to go a little bit further north. So definitely worth my time for sure.
And each region seems to have its own flavors and its own little nuances. So it's, you know, it's all one country, but it can be so drastically different from area to area. So it's almost like you could get a million little trips or a million different, completely different trips.
And Barolo and Barbaresco are really hearty wines too. So it's, you know, it's not your Cabernet. It's not a light little fruity wine. It's got some texture to it, shall we say.
It's hair on your chest.
It's chewy. It's chewy.
Not me personally, because I can handle my alcohol. So I did on this trip start a little social media sensation, if I may call it such, of Elizabeth drinking cocktails in beautiful places, because it was just a great place to have, like, you know, Aperol spritzes. And Italian cocktails are gorgeous. And Turin is actually the home of vermouth. So, you know, you may not realize that, but that's actually where, if you ask for a martini in Turin, they're going to give you Martini and Rossi. They don't give you a martini like you're used to, because martini came from Turin. So when you order martini, you want vermouth. You don't want that, you know, other stuff that you mix with vermouth to make a martini. You want the vermouth. So that can be a little bit surprising if you're not ready for it. But definitely, you know, I certainly was able to have a nice array of cocktails along with wine, which is sort of cool with Italy, because not all places that are wine focused and wine forward also have the sort of cocktail scene that you would find in places that aren't as wine forward. So
you did, let's talk a little bit real quickly about a little bit more in depth about where this is located, about how far from the airport. What was your trek like to get there?
Good question. So there is an airport in Turin. It's about 30 minutes away from Turin City Central, but you can't connect there really from North America flights. So most people, if you want to go to Turin, and Turin is the sort of focal point of the Piemonte region, then you would go to Malpensa, probably, because that's where all the international connections are, unless you're coming from Europe. There is a second airport in Milan, which is called Linate, and that's actually where I flew out of to go to Ireland. And it's way more delightful than Malpensa, just to put it out there. It's about an hour and a half with traffic to Turin from Milan. So it's a bit of a trek. You can take the train. It's a very, very train-friendly connection, Milan and Turin, two large cities for sure. We did a private transfer, which I was very grateful for. It was very pleasant. And I say we, I was traveling with a few other travel agents and we all landed at about the same time. So there were three of us in that private transfer. So that was really delightful. And that's something that we can arrange for you if you want something a little bit. I always like getting a private transfer as soon as I arrive in Europe, because you're tired and grumpy and sweaty and gross. And you don't really want to necessarily pile onto a train with all of your ample luggage and try to make it to your next destination. So for me, that was the way to do it. It was very easy. I mean, flying into Milan is very easy. And actually, my flight from Newark to Milan before I upgraded was like $550. So there's some really great connections. I think Newark and Boston both have some very inexpensive, and I think JFK too. So I actually did, in order to make that happen, if I'd flown from RDU, I would have had to pay a lot more. So I flew into Newark, just a one way up to Newark. I spent the night in Newark, and then, which, you know, was okay. And then I flew from Newark. So my flight, actually, my actual itinerary, as far as United knew, was United to Milan to Dublin, Shannon, back to Raleigh Durham, and that was relatively affordable. But if I'd flown Raleigh Durham to Milan, it just became astronomical. So sometimes you got to work the system. Notice that I did not since those flights weren't married, I did not fly to Newark the same day, because in case there had been a cancellation, I didn't want to miss my flight to Milan. So that's why I stayed.
Even going, knowing how it is now, going the day before, it still must have been pretty nerve-wracking.
I'm
telling everybody 2 nights in advance.
It was still a little nerve-wracking. And even honestly, that day, because you know, I've probably talked about this on the podcast before, but my sister lives in New York in the city. So my original plan was to go see her. Well, she ended up getting called away on business. So I literally spent the night in Newark at the airport, you know, hotel by myself. It was not glamorous at all. And so when I found out she was not going to be there, I thought, well, maybe I'll just move my flight to that morning. I mean, I've got plenty of time. And honestly, everybody I talked to, including the voice on my shoulder, was like, don't do it. That would be stupid. And it worked out fine. I have no idea if the flight the next day was canceled. I haven't looked to sort of, you know, test my, but in the end, it was much more comfortable for me to get there, get settled into a hotel, work for a bit, you know, have dinner, sleep, get a good night's sleep, get a good shower in the morning, and then head to the airport. So
that's amazing that flying to, you know, like another plane ticket and a hotel still made it worth your while.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You guys tease me all the time for all these extended trips I take. Well, look up how expensive it is to fly anywhere out of Seattle.
Yeah. I'm
constantly doing that, flying. Well,
some of it can send a value. And this is a podcast about Italy, so I won't talk about it too much. Yeah. But even like, had I stayed in Manhattan, it would have been a lot more expensive. It would have been more expensive. It wouldn't have been as expensive as the plane ticket direct from Raleigh Durham. But you know, the hotel in New York was going to cost me $350, you know, in Manhattan. And then I probably would have gone out to dinner with my sister, and that would have been an expensive meal, right? But at least the value is I'm spending the time with my sister, as opposed to just sitting on a plane going across the ocean. So it comes down to like where you want to put that money in the end.
It's that travel math.
Yes,
like the old school Disney math.
Exactly.
But, all the money you save, you can spend it on wine.
Right. And or an upgrade, which is what I ended up doing, because the upgrades got a lot cheaper once I got into that time period. So
I'm very curious, because you think about Italy. I mean, of course, we think about the wine, which we've now talked about for like 20 minutes. And you think about the food, which I'm sure you had some incredible food while you were there. That's one of my, I just think about Italy and my mouth starts to water. Mm-hmm. Like my taste buds can remember. But you have something on here that I was never even on my radar for Italy. Tell me about the rice patties.
Yeah.
In Italy.
You know, risotto, you know, is Italian. So
yeah.
Don't think about the rice actually growing. And so Vercelli, not to be confused with vermicelli, but Vercelli is a city in Italy, and it is mostly rice patties. It's all there. And I tried to get sort of the whole lowdown. I figured there's some link with Marco Polo, right? There must be some link there. But the rice patties there are really quite old, and we toured a very old farm that they've sort of preserved so that you could see what it looked like. We did not go wading through rice patties, thank you very much. Lots of mosquitoes, gross. But I did buy some rice. But yeah, it's fascinating. That whole area, their main industry is rice, and the rice paddies are everywhere. So definitely not a landscape I expected to see in Italy, for sure. And they're very proud of their rice, and it is very different, you know, from a lot of other rices. Everybody has their own strain of rice, or there, you know, there's lots and lots of types of rice, and the rice that they grow in Vercelli is ideal for risotto. So it's that sort of plumper arborio rice. But yeah, not something I would have ever expected in a million years yet. Totally something that is Italian, very Italian.
That's so neat.
And that area is also big on truffles. So we were not there in season, so we did not get to go truffle hunting with the pooches. But that is something that you can do in that area as well, especially white truffles.
Oh, I keep hearing more and more about that, truffle hunting with dogs.
Yeah.
I did that.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of people think it's just pigs, but pigs are actually not the most common truffle hunters. It's mostly very cute puppy dogs. Yes.
And I'm sure we'll get to talk about that another time, but any dog can be trained to be a truffle hound.
Yes.
Are you training your dogs to do that?
I brought home truffles. So tell us more about, what else did you see? What did you eat?
So a big highlight for me, and I'm sure it would be for anyone on this podcast, except maybe George. I don't know how George feels about cheese. How do you feel about cheese, George?
I love me some Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Oh, George.
This would not, I did not specify real cheese. Sorry. But
cheese might not have food.
The cheese caves were amazing. And I will say it's one of those, you know, you go down into, they're not actual caves. They're like basements, but cave is a good word for it. They're very temperature controlled. And the cheese cave we went to is not, they're not making cheese in the cheese cave. They're buying high quality cheese and then they're aging it in the cheese caves. That's really the purpose of it. So there is an aroma too. If you love cheese, you go, and if you don't like cheese, you go, I'm leaving.
I bet the security there has to be higher than
I honestly think I could have picked up a wheel of cheese and stuffed it under my shirt. But the problem is they're this big, so I couldn't have. But I really don't know. Nobody was really watching that carrot. And they do. It's mostly Italian cheeses, but they also Turin and the Piemonte region. That's in the northwest corner of Italy, so it's actually very close to France, all things considered. And so they do bring in French cheeses as well. And so there was some aging Camembert and things like that. And they did. If you go to this place, which is something that we can arrange for you, they do a tasting as well, so you can taste these different cheeses, and you could taste sort of in various points of aging, and even if it was aged, like they have a summer version or a winter version of this particular cheese that I cannot remember off the top of my head. It was wonderful. I mean, to end that tour, but also really fascinating because they had different temperature rooms for the different types of cheeses. They have to turn them, I think once a day, they have to turn the cheese it's very labor intensive, very old art, I guess is the best way to put it. An amazing place, family owned, you know, definitely, very proud family owns this. And, they actually, I feel like it goes back generations. I'm sorry. I'd have to look at my pictures to see how far back, but 100 years seems like a reasonable thing for me to say. I could be wrong about that, but, old family business. And very sought after cheeses, you know, the cheeses that they age, resell for quite a handsome sum. So that was something that was, you know, obviously you go to Italy and you think wine, cheese, pasta, but to see sort of that, and we weren't the Parma region, the Parmesan cheese and the Parma ham and all that. That's, you know, if you're going to Parma, you're going to see those things and you're going to do that. I wasn't really aware that cheese was even a thing in this area, but the climate, everything is very friendly to it. And then they, and this family's just been doing it for so long. So, and
that
I should add
the pictures that I was looking at and going, I was so jealous, so envious. It was all the cheese.
Yeah, so much cheese. And we would turn the corner and there'd be another like room of cheese.
See, you're just like, my heart's thumping right now.
And it was cold down there. So it's 100 degrees outside. So I'm like, just leave me in here with this cheese. I'll be good. I will be good.
So yeah, you can eat and cool off and all at the same time.
Yep. And it's interesting to see too, how the different cheeses age. Cause you know, some cheese will get the mold or the, you know, whatever, they'll need that mold in order to get better. Whereas other cheese is just a little dusty or, you know, it's just like, it just varies. They had ash, you know, there's a way to treat with ash, the cheese. So it was just very interesting. And obviously I didn't learn enough to be able to come home and do it myself. Otherwise I would be speaking much more intelligently about it. But, and it is, you know, you go down in there and you're like Donna said, you're like, oh, cheese.
I know.
They're talking and you're just like,
I'm drooling.
But that was actually a highlight on my itinerary. And I sent my itinerary to Brooke, who did some of my social media posts while I was gone. And I said, here's the itinerary, just so you know what I'm doing. So if I send you a random picture, you'll be able to tell what it is so that I won't have to type too much because I'm lazy. And she was like, do I see cheese caves? I'm like, yes. It's like the only thing that screamed out on the itinerary. Jeez. But that area too is in sort of a lake region and everybody thinks about the lake region. I think Donna, you commented, did you see George? George is over at the Como area, but Lake Maggiore in that area, it's a far less expensive, but just as beautiful area. it is still expensive. But the nice thing about it is these lakes are a day trip from Turin. So you can stay in Turin and then just take a day trip out rather than stay in the very expensive hotels out there. Of course, if you want to do that, that can be done. But we were able to take a day trip out there. We did the cheese caves. We did a little boat tour on the lakes to sort of see that we didn't actually stop at the varying islands because we were pressed for time because we were doing so much. But absolutely gorgeous. And I posted pictures of that on my social media as well. I mean, just truly beautiful scenery, mountains and lakes just right up next to each other, you know, not fjords, but absolutely gorgeous scenery. So highly recommend.
Very beautiful. Do you remember what any of the little islands were called?
No, but I think my notes here might say, hang on, let me see. No, it's named after a family, the Borromeo Island, maybe because some of them are owned by family. And it's interesting because like there's one there's a resort on it. And then there's another island that's like mostly restaurants you wouldn't really stay on it, but you go out for the day and this beautiful garden on it. So definitely a resort area. And cute shopping, you know, really nice, authentic shops, medieval streets, you know, great. Like Orta is one of the towns there and it's just beautiful to just walk around. You just walk down the streets and do a little shopping and, say hello to everybody's doggies and then go back to Turin at the end of the day.
This is just sounding like the perfect, ladies trip.
Yeah. You know what I will say, and I was there with five other women. And it really is ideal. The place that we stayed in the Montefiore Valley, which is where one of the wineries was that we went to, it was a little rustic. The air conditioning was having some challenges. But they have a Michelin starred restaurant there. And we just stayed there for a couple of nights and it was really delightful. And there were definitely girls trips there. And when I say girls trips, I'm talking about like 60-year-old Scandinavians. Yeah.
Women's trips. I hate that name, girls trips. We need to find something else to call it.
Not a bachelorette party, but yeah.
Not a bachelorette party.
Yeah. More mature.
Did you
women.
See any spas while you were there?
So there was a spa there at the place that we stayed in the Montefiore Valley. Yes, there was a spa at the hotel that we stayed at in Turin as well, the Turin Palace, that I think one person got to try. This is the thing with these work trips, you know. I will fully admit I went to some beautiful places. I got to see cheese caves. I got to get out on a boat. We didn't have a whole lot of time to get a massage. So, and you know that if I get a chance, I will do it. But we did not have a lot of time. And the few hours where I might've been able to sneak one in, I took a nap.
You probably needed it.
Well, especially after wine at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, it's like, you know,
well, I'm good. I'll go back and do it for you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, and I certainly, if I were planning your trip to Italy, I would build in time for that. But this was where I was trying to see I literally saw almost everything there is to see in this region in a week. So I do not recommend that. I would recommend taking a little bit slower or maybe picking and choosing a little bit.
Yeah.
I will say in Turin, you know, if you know anything about Turin, what do you know about?
The Shroud of Turin,
right? So, and I'm not a very religious person, but obviously that's a very huge relic. And
pilgrimage.
Right. And I've been fascinated by it because you know, I learned about it in elementary school. And it's like, this is the weirdest sort of thing, but you only get to see it if they choose to show it to you. And apparently the last time there was a public viewing of it was 10 years ago. So you can go to the church where it resides, and there's images of it, but you can't actually see it. So if you're going to Turin to see the shroud, you might as well just watch a documentary on it. You'll probably see more of it. So
that's interesting because I had not heard that.
Yeah. In fact, I was starting to wonder if it was even there anymore, you know, because it just seems so absent. There's no mention of it. There was no mention of it in our itinerary. We did go to the church where it was, but it really wasn't. It was, you know, for an American girl who only knows Turin because of the Shroud of Turin, I was surprised at like how much it was downplayed. The one thing that's in Turin that you may not know about, and honestly is worth the trip to Turin completely just by itself, is the Egyptian Museum. It's considered the second most important Egyptian museum in the world, right after Cairo. So even above the British Museum that contains all
really?
The artifacts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is full of stolen artifacts, but there were some Italian archaeologists that were sort of the lead meters in Egyptian archaeology at that time and did a whole lot of excavating. I saw more mummies in this museum than I've ever seen in all of the museums I've been to in New York and Britain and in Greece. I've never seen more Egyptian artifacts than I've seen here. It was mummies, especially. It was fascinating. And so they even had like a, apparently when they first started trying to mummify people, they would put them in a fetal position. It was believed that was better. And then it turned out that was actually more difficult to bury them. It took up more space. So they didn't, well, I say bury them, entomb them. They had to have these huge jars for them, you know? And so, but they had a fetal position mummy on display under glass. It was amazing. There was a mummy of, I think it was three sisters, and one of the sisters, her head was exposed. So you could actually see her head. You could see the hair. I mean, it was, whoa. She definitely looked dead, but it wasn't like she was laid out at the funeral. She was definitely in a state, but you could tell this was a human being, and it was amazing. You know, how old are these mummies? It's just amazing. And the art, and it was very smart that I saw Moon Knight before I went, because I knew so much more about Egyptian culture from that. They talked about the nine gods and all that stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, I know that. And the hippopotamus god, there's like a little statue of her. And I was like, oh, I recognize her. I just saw her on TV. So yeah, it definitely, for a layman, it was very good that I had that extra background, but just an amazing museum. And any museum will wear you out after a few hours. But I was worn out, but I wanted to see more. Like it was just it's just an amazing museum. So you could go to Turin literally just for that. It's a must see.
That sounds very fascinating. We loved, that was one of our favorite things in Egypt, was going to, I've been to the Museum of Alexandria and the other museums in Cairo. And, that was our favorite highlight of going to Egypt.
Yeah.
More than the pyramids, was getting to see the museums, and there's not enough time. So I can't imagine if it's probably something you.
Yep.
Probably
largest collection, largest collection outside of Cairo. So really astonishing. And even then they said that, I was like, really? But we went, and I mean, it was impressive. It was very, very impressive.
It makes sense. I would have thought it all ended up in Britain, but
same. You know. And Britain sort of tells you that too. They're like, yeah, we have this great Egyptian collection, you know, and
we
and
took all the good stuff.
Yeah, so I honestly can't say what how surprising and delightful that was to experience that. And Turin actually was a fun little city. And of course, we were also there. It was June, so it was Pride Month, and Italy goes all out for Pride. Oh. And so we stumbled on a few Pride events, and so the city was just really alive. And our guides did tell us, you know, there are good parts of the city and bad parts, just like anything else. So it's good to stay central. We were right by the train station, which is obviously very convenient. Some great restaurants right by there, very easy to get around and navigate around. We did, we stayed in Milan for our last night, and which isn't in the Piemonte region, but just to then have an easy exit from the country. And that city is also pretty easy to get around in with a metro and all of that. So I found it just a very personable city. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. Again, not knowing very much about it before I went, I didn't have expectations really at all. I didn't really know what to expect. And it's a great little city.
See, I love when we do shows like this, when we talk about parts of a country that get slept on, whether intentionally or unintentionally, because everyone's so focused on going. Oh, everybody goes to Rome, everybody goes to Venice, everybody goes to Tuscany. I like when we get to dive a little bit deeper and actually get to even secondhand experiences, because now I've a new fire. I want to go back to Italy.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I wasn't, you know, I was super excited to do something different, and to see this area, but I didn't know how much I would really like it. I will say that I would recommend not going in the summer. It's hot.
Yeah.
Did I mention it was hot? It's hot.
Yeah. I think you mentioned one or two times that it was hot.
Yeah. And they said it was unseasonably hot, but I don't care. I would say that you probably still want to go like more shoulder season. It was just too hot. Avoid that June, July, August. Now it isn't crowded like Venice, June, July, August, but I still think, or Rome for that matter, but I still think it, it would be better when it's not quite so hot.
That September would probably be perfect.
Yeah, I would agree. Both, yeah, April and September. And then actually, I think the truffle season is it October maybe? I think I have it in the white truffle season, October to December. Best time is late October to early November. Seems like a good idea to me.
That is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. I just want to hear more and more about Italy. please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends all about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of outlandertravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube. On behalf of Donna, Sandy, George, Elizabeth, and those fantastic cheese caves, myself, Lindsay, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.